You're listening to War for Idiots, a podcast by idiots for idiots.
Recording again.
So have you heard and or tried the new Coke?
No, because, one, I don't drink soft drink very often. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're drinking there?
No.
That's not the new Coke, that's Pepsi.
This is Pepsi Cola. Pepsi Max.
Pepsi's not the new Coke.
No, but I was thinking how much I would like to try the new Coke.
Yeah, well, we're going drinking tonight, so maybe we can try it at the
drinks. Like in different countries, this conversation would mean very different things. Like in Colombia. Have you tried the new Coke?
The new Coke?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, right, and well, San Francisco, I imagine.
Now that we've got each other's respect.
Yeah.
All right, we're ready to go?
Yeah, okay. We better go before we lose our entire Latin American audience.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of War for Idiots. My name is Rich, and I am indeed the harebrain.
And I'm Mick, the always gets the worst one, numbskull.
And we are indeed the idiots you've been looking for. Welcome back. And today, on this episode, we are tackling another case study. I love case studies. Case studies, we talk about a part of history. We try to apply some theory that we've spoken about in the past to it. And today's case study is
The Pacific Campaign of World War II, how it all began.
That's right. Talking about Pearl Harbor, baby. Talking about Pearl Harbor.
Okay, let's go.
So who are we? Well, we are the Tom and Jerry of war.
Excellent.
Good show.
Great show.
Who was who? Test.
Tom was the cat, Jerry was a mouse.
Is that how it went down?
How can it be a test if you don't have the answers?
I don't know what the answer is.
You're just like one of our lecturers. I will check it up. Ooh, controversial.
And what I would like to know is if Tom ever caught Jerry.
That crow is back.
No way.
Did you hear that?
No, no more crow. Hashtag no more crow.
Hashtag no more crow. Get on board.
Okay, so we are the Tom and Jerry of war. Yeah. And today we're talking about Pearl Harbor. We're not talking about war to discount the significance of war. We're making it more approachable. We want to talk about war at a more accessible level, the idiot level, some would say. And today we get to talk about the Pacific Campaign, my favorite campaign of World War II.
Really?
But before we start, let's start with a quote. Mick, this man is close to your heart.
Yes, he is. Close to my heart, because I think he was a damned hypocrite. Any man can make mistakes, but only an idiot persists in his error.
And that was?
That was Marcus Tullio Cicero, or Cicero, but I'm not a Latin speaker, so I don't really get hung up on it.
Roman politician and lawyer who served as consul in the year 63 BC.
He was also the one of Caesar's and later Marcus Antonius's biggest thorns in their sides. And in the end, Mark Antony had him killed, and Mark Antony's wife stuck hairpins in his tongue.
So the question is this podcast a mistake? And by persisting with it, are we indeed the idiots that we...
I think we are.
That we think we are.
I don't know, but you know what? I think this podcast would really annoy Cicero, and I'm good with that.
You're good with that?
Yeah.
All right, ladies and gents, we're going to talk about the Pacific. I'm going to start with a clip.
Yep, so watch this YouTube clip for us.
Members of the Senate, of the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces.
Okay, so...
That's deep.
That was... Excuse me while I get my microphone back on. So that was Franklin D. Roosevelt on December 8, 1941. And of course... He was referring to the attack on Pearl Harbor, which was a surprise military strike by the Imperial Japanese Navy Air Service against the United States naval base of Pearl Harbor in Hawaii the day before, December 7th, 1941. Now, this speech is significant. This is known as one of the most important speeches of all time. Because it's recorded, and it, you know, watch it on YouTube. Yeah. It's really good stuff.
And it launched America into the war.
And it got me really excited because he talked about a couple of things there, which I really want to break down, and that is why countries go to war. And to backtrack a little bit, we're sort of starting the Pacific. What we want to do is do a series of podcasts about the Pacific campaign.
And we want to take you on a tour of the Pacific.
Yeah, exactly right.
We should organise a battlefield tour. People have come with us. The entire Pacific. Lots of money. Let's do it.
But for many people, they think that this speech and that, in fact, the attack on Pearl Harbor was the start of World War II.
Yeah.
But realistically, it wasn't the start. And we'll break down exactly
why. There'd
been a little bit of fighting before. Some would say a whole bunch of fighting.
Some would say a lot of fighting.
But if I was to say, what was this speech? What was Pearl Harbor? It was more a gear change for what the war would become.
You know, it also was?
Yeah.
A really bad Ben Affleck movie.
I have not seen it.
Haven't you?
Is it good?
What
you just said that.
If you watch Pearl Harbor, you could never imagine that that actor would be the greatest Batman ever.
I don't know if he's the greatest Batman ever.
No, but I've told you so.
Okay, yeah, my wife would disagree with you strongly.
Yeah, that's all right.
Okay, so we want to start at Pearl Harbor as a bit of a way of a reference point. And at the end of this episode, we'll get to Pearl Harbor and then we'll push forward for a future episode.
Yeah.
But I think what's important to remember is that prior to Pearl Harbor, War was already happening around the world. The one that we want to focus on, because of the Pacific, is, of course, the Second Sino-Japanese War. That is the war between China and Japan, which in this instance started in 1937.
Yeah, and it's the same as the Second Sino-Japanese War
as well. What did I say? Sino?
Yeah. That's right, that's Australian for Sino.
Sino, you want to have a war? Hey,
grab us a beer, mate.
Okay, and for a lot of people, they in fact cite the Sino-Japanese War commencing in 1937 as the start of World War II.
Yeah, because they see it as being before Germany's little expeditions into Czechoslovakia and Poland. Japanese expansion was occurring through the 1920s and 1930s.
Yep.
And some of that expansion wasn't necessarily welcome.
Exactly.
So it depends on it depends on where you sit on in the Pacific Ocean on how you view it a lot of the times. Mm. Like, for those of us on this side, well, World War II kind of started a little bit earlier.
Exactly.
For some of our neighbours.
Exactly.
And for some of our neighbours, it didn't end until 1975.
So, let's use Pearl Harbor as our reference point. Let's use this question, which I'm going to say is the elephant in the room.
Okay.
Why did Japan attack Pearl Harbor? Okay. Don't have to answer it. Don't say 47 or whatever you always say when I ask you
an elephant in the room in the first place.
Let's cover some facts. Think about this question, why did Japan attack Pearl Harbor? And we're going to come back to this question at the end. But let's state some facts that frame this question. A mixed soundboard is...
That's a really lame...
always reliable to
I
be late.
I found the problem. So let's deal with the elephant.
Good.
In the room. Storage is almost full on the recording device. It's okay, we'll keep going.
Okay, a couple of facts. So we already talked about that Japan was already at war with China.
Yes.
Now let's think about Germany. Now, when Pearl Harbor happened, Germany by this time had already overrun France.
Yeah.
They had already reached Moscow on the Eastern Front. And they were looking at conducting a cross-channel crossing and to do an attack on Britain as well. Britain was desperate for support. And then you had America. You had Franklin D. Roosevelt, FDR, and he was sitting on the fence about whether to support Britain, support the war that was being overrun by Germany in Europe, essentially.
Yeah.
He was facing a lot of issues. American isolation.
American isolationism?
Was a thing that he was debating. You know, if America was to commit to world war, they would come out of this isolationist, they would have to look after the world, they would have to be the world police kind of thing. And these, you know, many people wanted to keep America great, no pun intended, you know, just focus on America policy, to focus on domestics, don't worry about international policy. These are the types of decisions he had to make. There's lots of politics. Did he really need to commit to war? you know, we know that as a result of Japan power play, he moved the Pacific Fleet to Hawaii. That's not where they were always based, which is a controversial move in itself. So
yeah.
Essentially, the whole world, you know, when you line this up, was on this balancing board of what's America going to do? What's America going to do? You know, this is going to be the game changer. Is FDR going to commit to it? Then the Japan bombs Pearl Harbor. Then...
Did you say the Japan?
Then the Japan bombs... I'm so excited. Then Japan bombs Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Then to rub salt in the wound, Japan declares war on America.
After
bombing
after
Pearl Harbor. So if you look at this, you're like, why did they bomb Pearl Harbor? What would they possibly have gotten from it?
Because it was a really bad movie.
They forced America into the war. So that's the general sort of conversation that's had around this attack.
And the Admiral conversation as well.
Crazy Japanese, crazy culture. They just did this because they're crazy.
You're saying what people are saying, right?
Exactly. Yeah. But I think when you break it down, which we're going to try to do in this episode...
I really wish I had a sound bite that would suit it, break it
not
down.
Not really such a crazy decision. In fact, you can kind of think, you know, when you go through the facts, which we're going to go through some now, that potentially a bit of a pragmatic, a bit of a practical decision going forward. What's your thoughts on the matter?
I think that it may not necessarily have been... It's not the decision they needed to take.
Yep.
So to enter war with the US by their aggression in the Pacific. So you got the Japanese trying to establish the greater East Asia prosperity sphere, which is basically this economic zone where they controlled all the trade and resources in. The Japanese believed they would need to challenge America would be the only people that could challenge their dominance of that. So they believe they needed to defeat America militarily to do so.
Yeah.
So this tension's built up, like you said. And then you've got this idea that, well, yeah, if we attack the United States, it's got to be, boom.
Exactly.
Really bad.
Exactly.
It's got to hit them hard. So this guy, Isoroku Yamamoto.
Yamamoto.
He's like, well, if we're going to do it, we need to take out their capital ships based in Hawaii.
Okay.
And just let me get there. But everyone's like, you know, he was pushing hard for it. The reason he was pushing hard for it was this is a bit of a crazy move because America can outpace us industrially.
Yeah.
They will beat us in a long war. So if we're going to do it, let's just do something no one's expecting.
Yeah.
Let me hit them. Then, declare war if you want.
Yeah.
But let me hit them first.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, we're going to get to... So that's probably like exactly Yamamoto was... He wasn't so much the strategic part of it. He was thinking sort of, I suppose, operational part of...
Yeah.
Let me do a blow to them that's going to stop them from...
Yeah. If we're going to fight America, we need to do this now.
And I think what you'll find is Yamamoto didn't want to do it at all. He was just making the best of a worst-case scenario.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, but let's backtrack a little bit. So we already talked about how Japan was at war with China starting in 1937.
Yeah, fighting on the land. Land war, massive
sidebar.
Land war.
Sidebar. If you want to read a wacky story, read about how the Second Sino-Japanese War commenced. It is truly crazy how this war started. If you're a tactical commander out there and you think you can't have a strategic effect, read how this war started.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so that's the context in Asia. Over in Europe, by 1939, Germany has invaded Poland.
Yeah.
Britain and France declare war on her. And Japan is kind of like, hey, Germany, welcome to the party. Been at war for 2 years already.
Yeah, okay. This whole alliance thing, you got to hold up your end of the bargain.
Right. So what happens is in 1940, Japan enters a tripartite pact with Germany and Italy.
That means tripartite.
This guarantees that Germany will come to the aid of Japan if Japan goes to war in America, and essentially is a giant middle finger from Japan to America.
That's right.
Like, bring it. Okay. So this is the context, Rightio. Let me just stop for a minute and just say that you've got Germany taking Europe, you've got Japan who's now aligned themselves with Germany and Italy, you've got Britain about to fall, you've got France that's fallen, Russia doesn't know what's happening. This is happening, and this is very hard to fathom for me.
Yeah.
To me, I'm like, okay, so you're describing season 8 of Game of Thrones. You know,
you've
got these countries or these kingdoms falling down.
Get me a map and re-explain it.
Exactly. It is so hard for me to fathom. You know, you say something like, okay, and then Germany invades Poland and Britain and France declare war. These are real countries. These are people in these countries are affected by that. It is so hard to imagine in this world where everything is connected that something as simple as, oh yeah, and then Germany invades Poland, that is just a simple thing that can be covered in one sentence. But Excuse me. But in 1940, the world slipped into war just so easily. Could this happen again? You know, I don't know. Okay. So that's what's happening around the world, all before Pearl Harbor happens. But what's important, I think, to understand, and you started covering on it, was that European countries were beginning to fall. Germany had taken France. Germany was putting pressure on Britain. And what France and Britain had in Asia were colonies.
Yeah.
Right? So suddenly...
Don't point to me while I'm tweeting.
Sorry. So suddenly, Japan is presented with what you could say were nuggets of gold for them to go to. You had Singapore, which was protected by Britain as one of their colonies, but because Britain was now under threat by Germany, the protection wasn't there. It's sort of ripe for the taking. You had French Indochina, which was ready for the taking because France was now owned by Germany. So you think to the south of Japan, they're suddenly presented with this whole bunch of territory that was not being protected. What did Japan need at this time? They were desperate for oil. What did all these colonies have? They had oil.
They liked rubber too.
Rubber, oil. So what else could Japan have done in this situation where they were going for dominance? And we sort of stop again and reflect on the sort of things that Japan had presented with. What could they do?
Oh my God.
That crow's back.
I just tweeted no to crows.
And I think we think back to Thucydides. Now help me out.
My
help me out when we're talking about Thucydides.
Man, I'm Thucydides out, but I will help you out with Thucydides.
Put yourself in Japanese shoes.
Thucydides was Greek. That is something
I
do know.
Put yourself in Japanese shoes.
I'm in Japanese shoes. Look,
we talk about Thucydides. Fear, honor, interest. What are they thinking right now?
Well, so Japan's interest is the natural resources that they can't get from the Japanese homeland.
Yes.
Their fear is that they are... And this also has to do with a lot of political treaties that were worked out after World War One.
Yep.
Remember, Japan was fighting on the side of the US and British.
Isn't that crazy? And then I watched a documentary that it was something like... And then the Japanese admiral wrote, "Our next enemy is America."
Yep.
And it was in like 1907. Like this is a deep hatred for America. That's
I don't think it's deep hatred. I think it's just understanding the risk. Although, if I was Japanese and our country was isolated from the West, and then Matthew Perry sails a naval ship gunboat into Tokyo and just goes boom boom with his cannons, you guys now open up the world trade, I'd probably have a problem with Americans. Anyway. Matthew Perry, Commodore Matthew Perry, not the guy from Friends.
It's like you're in my mind.
I can see the gifts going across your eyeballs. But, you know, the political treaties after World War One, they place certain restrictions on certain countries. Now, Japan, who considered itself a reasonable, fair player in the First World War and supportive ally, gets some pretty harsh terms in sort of what they can build in their navy. Knowing that their interests are going to be in the Pacific...
Washington Treaty. They
kind of need it. The Washington Treaty, that's right. So the Washington Treaty is part of that fear and builds that fear of the Japanese
that
they need to stand up for themselves if they want to be recognized as a global power.
I mean, is that fear rational? Is it rational fear? Is it irrational fear? Well, you know what I mean? Was America ever going to attack
I think
them?
Fear is neither rational or irrational. It's how you deal with it that can be rational or irrational. Boom! Blew your mind.
Good, thank you. That's great. Okay, so what happens?
But you got 12 minutes to tell everyone.
Well, there is a huge disparity for what the next step is in Japan. All this territory is opening up to the south. Germany is winning. They're allies with Germany. There's a huge disparity about the next strategic step that they're going to take between the Japanese Navy and the Japanese Army. Now, let's backtrack to our episode where we talked about political objective and about strategy. How is a nation like Japan in a situation where their military, and only the military, is guiding the next step forward? Okay? This has happened in the past, and this is a rhetorical question.
It'll happen in the future.
Second question, How can this nation, in which the military is directing them forward, be so split between what the army wants and what the navy wants? Okay, another podcast can be done just on the militarization of Japan, something you can Google. It is absolutely fascinating. Forget Clausewitz, forget Sun Tzu, forget thinking you know how to lead a state in wartime. The Japanese case study of the IJA, Japanese Army, and the IJN, the Navy, both services having their own air forces separate from each other. Fascinating the way that these guys went forward.
I can never remember the full service names, but I know the Navy, I think it was called the Kaigun.
Navy's Kaigun.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the Army.
Kaiguru or Kaigun. Anyway, Kaigun, I think, is a pretty cool word.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But anyway, in essence, the Army, they were already committed to China. They've been committed there since 1937. Now, they already had forces to the north of China in a little place called Manchuria.
Just a little place called Manchuria. For some of our listeners, that is probably five times the size of your country.
Now, on the border of Manchuria is a country we haven't spoken about yet.
Are we talking about Russia?
Russia.
So, well, I was going to say there's not much
So
else.
For the army, you're talking Russia, you're talking China. These are the enemies of the army, and this is where the focus wanted to be. They wanted to defend to the west on the land, China, resources, to the north, Russia in Manchuria, and
defend.
Then start looking to,
that was awesome.
And start looking to the south where these resources were.
Yeah.
The Navy, on the other hand, well, there's not much water to the west.
No.
There's a bit between the island and the land.
Yeah, that's right.
But their enemy was to the east, across the entire Pacific, to America. So realistically, what you have is by the army pulling to one direction, the navy pulling to the other, Japan is isolating itself with so many different enemies.
Although, the navy still held out quite a bit in the Battle of Shanghai, but there's only so much you can do for the Sino-Japanese War when it's being waged on land.
Exactly.
And you're a waterborne capability.
Exactly. So disparity existed, but they did come together with the plan that they were going to do. And this is what led to Pearl Harbor.
They almost came together, agreed to disagree, and then did the plan.
We're going to do this. So this was, as Mick covered earlier, under the mastermind of Admiral Yamamoto. Again, you can do a whole podcast on him. Look up the death/killing/assassination of Yamamoto.
Oh,
fascinating
brilliant.
In itself.
Yeah, and two pilots were denied the Medal of Honor because they both claimed the kill. In two different planes.
Did not know that.
Yeah, no, only our good buddies who we're going to have a chat with soon, Aiden and PowerPoint Sapper, Angry Staff Officer,
yep.
Who do the War Stories podcast. It has an audience much bigger than this one. So everyone's probably already listened to it.
Six to seven people.
Six to seven people. They did a great episode on the assassination of Admiral Yamamoto.
There you go. So under Yamamoto, the plan was, as you said, strike Pearl Harbor. Deny the Americans their ability to immediately enter into the war. We know we're going to go to war with America, so let's hit them and take them out for a period of time so that we can do some other things. What are they going to do? What were they going to do? Well, as soon as they struck Pearl Harbor, they're going to start doing their sweep through Asia, through those colonies that are now no longer protected by the countries that are being sort of put pressure onto from Europe, from Germany. Like France, like Britain. Then, once they've taken all the territory to the south, they've started moving towards the east, they then push through the navy to the east, and they've struck Pearl Harbor, they're going to establish a defensive line across the Pacific. This line is going to go across land, it's going to go across sea. And then, finally, when America is ready to enter the war, they have to penetrate this defensive line. And as soon as they penetrate, they're going to be attrited, so that by the time they reach the home island of Japan, nothing they can do. To do all this whilst maintaining their war with China and whilst maintaining forces in Manchuria to ensure that Russia doesn't enter the war against them or are unable to take their territory.
Yeah. Easy.
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 Easy. Hey,
and the fact that they won the war proves it was a good idea.
We're idiots. We don't know what happened. Okay. So look. So what happened? Well, it works.
Yeah.
It absolutely worked.
For a bit.
For a really small period of time.
Because economics and industrial capacity is a big deal these days.
Exactly.
Even those days.
Exactly. So the strike on Pearl Harbor was meant to be the strike on the aircraft carriers. Aircraft carriers were not there at the time.
Weren't they?
Well, this is the debate. Were they going for the battleships? Were they going for the aircraft carriers? Or the aircraft carriers weren't there?
It's good that we have different understandings because from both of our understandings, our audience can only get dumber.
Exactly. Exactly.
But my understanding was that they were aiming for the capital battleships.
Yeah, there you go.
And if they had have hit the carriers,
yep.
But not all the carriers were there, as you said.
No, they're out on some carrier exercise, is my understanding of it. Sure. So, I mean, and this
But
is...
even if they hit the refueling facilities. I mean, this is a good lesson to a previous episode we've done about maneuver warfare.
Yep.
Target the enemy's logistics. You're probably going to take him out for the battle for a lot longer. Him or her. Out of the battle for a lot longer than if you target just their fighting equipment.
Exactly. Exactly. So they struck Pearl Harbor.
How about that, Yamamoto?
And in 5 months, they did an incredible sweeping through of Southeast Asia. Incredible amphibious lodgments. And in 5 months, they, you know, go on YouTube and have a look at the 5 months that Japan swept through Asia. And it is incredible stuff that they did. They seized vast territory in Asia. They established the defensive line. And their plan worked. But what they didn't appreciate was how angry America was going to be from Pearl Harbor. And I don't think anyone, except for America, could fathom how angry they would
be. We surprise bombed them, but they're going to be cool with it.
Exactly. Exactly. And
hey, man, be cool.
Exactly. And if I can quote Yamamoto, months later, after fighting with America, he said something along the lines of, "Oh, America has Bushido as well, but it's a different type of Bushido. These guys fight for more than just fighting." And it's quite incredible. So that was the road that led to Pearl Harbor. So what can we take away from this road to war, Mick? Talk to me about politics. Talk to me about strategy. What do we learn?
So, I mean, the militarization of Japan is something that everyone should look into when they try and understand how different types of political systems go to war.
Absolutely. If I can interrupt, you know, thank you. We're eventually going to get to Okinawa.
Yeah.
We're eventually going to get to kamikaze. We're eventually going to get to suicide attacks. And you're going to be like me when I first heard of this stuff. Japan, crazy. Japan militarized. But if you study how they got here, it is all by design. You know what I mean? It is all practical. It's all pragmatic. It's all within the confines of the social context of the time.
And the cultural understanding of what they were trying to achieve.
And, you know, if you were to reverse time to the 20s or even 30s, early 30s, and say to Japan, "I want you to crash airplanes into ships," they would have been like, "No, that's not what we do. That's not what we do." But after a decade and more of fighting, after the militarization of it, you know, you change culture.
So going through that process in the 20s and 30s was key. And understanding how that changed their strategic outlook. And some of their strategic decision-making was then focused and divided, and not necessarily keeping in mind that, was this the best way to achieve our end state?
Yeah.
I had a very good conversation with a fellow student a couple of months ago who argued if you look at the Japanese economic dominance, particularly of the electrical and automotive industries from the 1960s on to the late 90s and early 2000s, the Japanese war aims of achieving a strong hegemonic economic power were achieved. Though, no one would say that Japan went with a strategy of losing a war to America and then having America rebuild them as an economic superpower would have been a good idea.
You know, people, look, let's change gear a little bit. Let's talk about the Eastern Front. Some people say that in the 1939-1940s, date escapes me, that Stalin knew Germany was going to invade Russia.
Yeah.
He saw the build-up happening. But he wasn't going to get Western support until his territory was violated.
Yeah.
And so that maybe he didn't put up such a strong defense as a result. You know,
yeah.
I don't know whether
politically, politically what was best for him. Exactly. You know?
Politically, he got the Western support and, you know, but got a lot of power from
it. I think we can be pretty accurate to say Japan did not enter the war to lose and then be rebuilt. But
that's not true. But
the idea of what they were trying to
put behind
this. Yeah, but what they wanted to achieve, the way they went about it may not have been the only way they could have done that.
Exactly. And look, the main thing I wanted to do... I think I said Wayne.
Yeah.
The main thing I wanted to do with this episode...
Wait, Wayne!
The main thing I wanted to do was really address the concept that Pearl Harbor was the start of World War II. I think most people would not believe that, but maybe most people didn't understand the context of it too well. I certainly did not until I started reading about it. And I wanted to address that Japan was crazy to attack Pearl Harbor because people said by attacking Pearl Harbor, Yamamoto forced America into the war. But when you look at it, Yamamoto knew, Japan knew that they were going to fight America eventually, so why let America build up power?
There's a strong political argument out there, and there's been books written about it that I haven't read.
About
that America's history is dominated by the need to control the hegemony of the Pacific.
Okay.
So whether or not that specific theory is, you know, true for all of America's history, what was very relevant for this period in time, specifically because of the Washington Treaty, was that for Japanese to be the regional hegemon in the Pacific, they needed to deal with America somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
The way they chose to do it was launching an attack on Pearl Harbor that they thought would defeat any further American will to challenge that hegemony. What it did, though, was it bolstered American will to enter the war.
Yeah. Exactly. And if the decision by the Japanese was truly crazy, if the decision was truly samurai honor, you know what I mean?
Well, it's a bastardized version of it too, isn't it? It's like, it's the samurai honor bits we like.
Exactly. But if it was truly not without design or not without strategic thought that had some sort of backing, then it wouldn't have been a strike on Pearl Harbor, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It would have been an attempt to seize Pearl Harbor, to hold Hawaii, to take American territory.
Like, Yamamoto wasn't a dumb guy. That's why the Americans launched a very specific military operation to kill him.
Exactly. Okay, cool. Well, look, hey, that's our episode on, the first of many, hopefully, on the Pacific. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you can link some things we've spoken about in the past and that we've provoked some thought, or hopefully you see the Pacific from a slightly different angle. Hopefully you disagree with us.
Yeah.
And if you do, hey, write in, tell Mick how wrong he was and how right I was.
Yeah. Jump on Twitter and say, you ain't all that rich.
So you can get us on Twitter at war, numeral 4, idiots. Mick, where are you at?
I am at Mick_Cook. Please donate to my campaign to raise funds for Soldier On, Veterans Charity.
And I am at Rich_TTT. We certainly got a lot of merchandise out there.
Yeah, now if you're not the sort of person that wants to donate to charity, that's okay. You're not a bad person.
That's right.
You're the sort of person that wants to buy merchandise.
Exactly.
And if you want to... That truck... I'm going to have words with that
truck. I think the crow's driving it.
We have t-shirts and coffee mugs on the Dead Prussian store on zazzle.com.au /...
Never heard of him.
Dead-Prussian. Just Google the Dead Prussian at Zazzle and you will find the War for Idiots merchandise wrapped in there. Feel free to buy any of the stuff, but the War for Idiots stuff is the one that Rich wants me to sell on this show.
And if you buy some of that stuff, you can legitimately say to people, I'm one of the first people to buy it.
I'm not even sure if we've sold any merchandise yet from that. I've sold some Dead Prussian stuff.
Yeah.
But some War for Idiots stuff, it is exclusive. And you know why? Because it's high quality, high priced, high quality.
Yeah, and I think it highlights that. We're just doing this for fun.
Yeah, we're not making money off of people. We've seen zero money from any merchandise, but that's not what we're doing this for. Also, if you do engage with us on social media and you do purchase some of our merchandise, send us a photo of you with our merchandise. Preferably if it's a t-shirt, wear it.
don't be drinking coffee out of it.
Preferably, if it's a coffee mug, don't wear it. Because that would be a weird photo.
All right, guys. Well, look, I hope you enjoyed the episode. And until next time, that's Mick.
And that's Rich.
And remember,
we may be idiots,
but maybe so are you.
War for Idiots is a TDP production. All opinions expressed by individuals on the podcast are those of the individual and not necessarily representative of any other organisation. The music used during War for Idiots is Fireworks by Jazzar and is used under an Attribution Share Alike 3.0 international licence.